Hi, babes. Tilly here. If you didn't know, Susan and I are directing a very trans short film, and the producers are crowdfunding it, and now you can support it and help make it happen. Set 25 years into the future, along the way is a sci-fi story about Victoria and the father who died when she was very young. As a trans woman who transitioned as an adult, her father never got to know her truth. She uses a one round trip only time travel device to jump back to our present and meet the man she can barely remember, bond with him over comics, and try to find out if he'd love her for who she really is. Written and directed by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, original comic art by our friend and GLAAD award-winning artist Richard Fairgray, produced by Erin McDonald, science consultant to Star Trek, Erin Loss, and Jessie Earle, known for her Jessie Gender YouTube channel. Crowdfunding is open from February 19th until March 21st, and there's a lot of cool rewards, including comics and pins featured in the film, shoutouts, behind-the-scenes stuff, and you can even get a producer credit. Check out all the details at tinyurl.com/longawayshort. And even if you can't monetarily support the project, which we completely understand, please sign up to follow the project and post about it and spread the word. Every little bit helps us make our budgetary goals so we can make this movie. Because we need trans stories now more than ever. Thank you for your support. Love you. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. Today we're going to dive into another movie with an incredible trans allegory that says something truly wonderful about trans folks. We're starting the intentional trans allegory of Real Genius, Part 1. Context and screenwriter P.J. Torekve. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, my favorite screenwriter who isn't me, Susan Bridges.
Hello!
So you're number two on my list of favorite screenwriters, because I'm number one.
Of course.
You got it?
I mean, all right, that's fine.
You're not going to fight me on that? Okay.
I'm my favorite screenwriter.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. Our guest this week is Kestrel Clayton, and just because she's a bad girl doesn't mean she's a bad girl. Welcome, Kes.
Hi, Tilly. It's so great to be here with you today. I appreciate you inviting me to be on your podcast. Big
of
fan,
course.
As you know.
Aw, thank you. Well, before we dive in, I wanted to get your thoughts broadly on this movie and what it's meant to you personally, because I know you're a really big fan of it, which is why I wanted to have you on for these. So, like, when did you first see it, and did you see yourself reflected in it when you were watching, and how did it impact you? Give me all the deets.
Oh, my goodness. We are diving right in with the questions, aren't we? I loved this movie when I was little. One summer, I stayed with my uncle, who had a huge collection of bootleg VCR tapes, he'd rent things from the store and copy them and then have them on the shelves. And to the best of my knowledge, he never watched a single one of these. He just liked having them. I guess it was like the early version of streaming media. I've got 50,000 movies, but I don't watch any of them.
Sure, sure.
But I love this movie so much. Staying with him, I must have watched it half a dozen times, maybe more. It just connected with me so deeply in ways that would take me over 30 years to start to understand. And I don't know if we're going to talk about the individual characters, but
we will next Jordan, episode. Yeah.
Jordan, more than anyone.
Yeah.
Wow, touched me. But Mitch and Chris and Laszlo and even Kent. There are aspects of who I was and who I could have become growing up, because this is a coming of age movie, and coming of age movies are always about who are you going to be?
Yeah.
So, wow, this just touched me so deeply. And this movie, when I was little, a lot of times I'd cry when watching it, and I wouldn't understand why.
Yeah. Did you pick up on the sort of underlying transness of it all? Like consciously, did you ever recognize that that's what was going on in there?
Not until after transition,
Yeah.
and I was looking through. This was, let's see, I hatched about 3 years ago, and I was looking at my collection of movies, and I saw Real Genius. This was maybe 3, 4 months after I realized I was trans femme and non-binary. And
Yeah.
I thought, oh, Real Genius, that's a great movie. I've got it on DVD. I haven't watched it in a while. Let's watch that. And I watched it, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this movie
Yeah.
is so trans. This movie is extremely trans.
It's so trans.
And I did not know at the time that PJ, and I apologize for butchering her name, Turokhpay, I think. I
Yeah.
didn't know that she was trans femme. That's something I learned from you, talking to
Yeah.
you, like, wow, how did I not see that? And I watched the movie again after we discussed that, because I've watched this movie probably 4 times just in the last 2 years. I watched this movie again, and I find myself looking at different scenes, and I think, you know, there are 4 screenwriters, I think, 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I found myself thinking, is this a scene that Mrs. Turokhpay wrote? Because this is a really transy scenes.
Yeah.
And then you get back into other scenes that are more very 80s, dude
Yep.
bro comedy, performative masculinity. And I think she did not write that. And a lot of times those really dudely dude scenes immediately roll into discomfort with masculinity and
Yeah.
transy stuff. And I think, I bet she wrote that. I wish I could have spoken with PJ Trocvé, discussed this film with her,
Yeah.
ask her thoughts, what parts of you are in this, and more than anything, I wish I could have told her, hey, to an eggy little trans girl who would take another 30 odd years to hatch, this movie was such a lifeline. Made
Yeah.
me feel connected in a way I would not understand for decades. So, PJ Turokhpay, wherever you are, if you are hearing this from a better place, thank you from my heart. Thank you.
Yeah, we're gonna this whole episode is gonna be all about her, and because you need the context of what she was going through and living in to understand the movie. So we're gonna get into that more later, but or soon actually. But yeah, it is wild how incredibly trans so much of it is. But okay, so before we dive into that, let's get into a little bit more personal questions for you so the audience can get to know you. So for you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
That's a really tough question. That's like asking your favorite food because there are
Yeah,
so
there's
many good
so
choices.
many, right?
And you might give a different answer on a different day, but if I had
Sure.
to pick one, I might say it's the increased emotional awareness. It's
Yep.
like all your life you have extremely poor vision. The world is this blur of moving colors, and you can't really make sense of it, and it's anxiety inducing. Sometimes it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But then one day you put on glasses and everything snaps into crystal clear focus. I can
Yeah.
see and understand what I'm feeling. I
Yeah.
know what to do about it. And it's improved my personal life tremendously because instead of being angry and not knowing why, sometimes not even knowing what I'm feeling, I can say, oh, hey, I'm mad. And here's why. Here's what to do about it. Hey, you know, to my husband, I don't like the way you talked to me just now. Or to one of my friends, you know, we always do what you want. Can we do what I want instead?
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, I would just kind of get angry and sullen and sometimes blow up. And it's incredible. And I love it. It is the best part of being Kestrel.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, I always felt things super deeply. Like, we still have emotions, but I didn't understand them. I didn't know what to do about them. And all of them led to this just sort of like, I guess, base level anger. Like, what's going on with me? Why am I like this? I can't understand myself, and it so you would react sometimes in the complete wrong way for how you're actually feeling or for the situation. And getting on estrogen, on the right hormones for me, it changed I did not expect the emotional and mental changes at all. I thought, you know, is that the thing? I think it's something people don't talk about them that often, or at least in what I'd read about before starting, it was not something that ever even came up. I didn't see anybody talking about it, so it hit me like a total surprise, you know, out of the blue, like, whoa, I didn't know you could feel like this mentally, you know, that it was possible to live as a happy human being, I guess. So.
And especially when you are trying to perform these masculine
Oh,
roles
yeah.
that feel uncomfortable, that in itself creates emotional distress. And on top of that, what are men not supposed to do? They're not supposed to show emotional distress. So it just builds up like a volcano. And now being able to allow myself, and this is the part of transition that is not hormones, that's purely psychological. That I can just say to people, I'm sad. I need a hug. Or, you know, gosh, I'm lonely today. I'm going to call up my friends and just say, hi, let's talk for a while. I miss you. Those are things that men should be allowed to do, but
Absolutely.
in our society, and especially as somebody who never felt like she was performing masculinity adequately, I had to push all of that down. And now I get to be me, and I like me.
I like you too.
Oh, thanks, Dills. I like you too.
Yay! It's a love fest. Okay. So before we jump in, do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they'd like to look up and learn more about Kestrel after listening?
Sure thing. I am known as Sphinx of Black Quartz just about everywhere online. My primary home is Sphinx at tech.lgbt. That's a Fediverse instance for those of you on Mastodon and the Fedi. And that's really my online home right now. I did kill my Facebook and Twitter accounts because they'd become extremely hostile to people like us.
They sure have. Yeah, mine are still up only so people don't impersonate me, but I do not post there anymore. So, all right. I had somehow managed to never see Real Genius for my entire life until watching it to do this write-up, and I don't know how that happened. I wasn't trying to avoid it or anything.
You missed out.
I did. I could have been loving this movie my whole life. But a trans friend of mine mentioned to me that she thought I should do an examination of its trans allegory, and this, of course, piqued my interest. Especially when learning that one of the three credited writers was a trans woman. So I watched it, and there is definitely a trans allegory at play, and we're going to talk about it, but we have to talk about a few other things first. A trans woman screenwriter. I mean, talk about my wheelhouse. That is me. And here's a movie written by one of us from the 80s. But Hollywood is complicated, and so is trying to learn about trans people who existed in the past, despite the fact that we have always existed and always will, for reasons I talked about in Trans History 1, How and Why We Name Trans People in History, back in episode 79. We are going to go through the movie by timestamps, just like my deep dives on The Matrix in my book Begin Transmission, discussed in episode 26, Barbie, which began in episode 61, I Saw the TV Glow, which began in episode 81, and Twilight Zone's Nervous Man in a $4 Room, which is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. And I know that's likely what you're all anxious for, so I want to mention that won't start until part two next week because there's vital context we have to talk about first. You don't have to have read my book to understand the trans allegory of Real Genius, but I will call back to the Matrix allegories multiple times because, surprise, surprise, different trans allegories are still trans allegories and thus have much in common. And the Matrix is the platonic ideal as far as trans allegories go. Now, it's common for movies to have multiple writers across multiple drafts. The Writers Guild has rules for who gets credited and how, but not every writer that works on a movie script always gets credited.
It's very complicated.
It's very complicated. There's all kinds of rules. It's also common for script changes to happen during shooting, for the director to adjust things, etc., etc. There's no way to know how much of what made it into the shooting script and then ended up in the movie was from the trans woman writer's contributions. So there are other voices mixed in with hers, and she didn't direct it. This is not a case of a pure vision like with the Wachowskis in the Matrix movies or Jane Schoenbrunn in I Saw the TV Glow. This is one trans voice amid a sea of cis voices, all contributing to the final product.
I would say even The Matrix isn't a pure vision, partly because the Wachowski sisters were so far ahead of their time, so far ahead of what Hollywood was ready to show of our
Yeah.
experiences. It's close, but I always identified very closely with Switch
Sure.
as kind of a an ambiguously gendered trans femme character. And I really hate that they cut out her being explicitly trans. Still,
Yeah.
androgynous femme representation, I'm there for it.
Yeah. They definitely still have to meet the notes and requirements of the studio and the executives, that were over their heads in terms of like who gets the
So
final say
many
in things.
contributors at all the different levels really have no idea about it.
I see trans metaphors and an overall allegory in Real Genius, and some parts we can almost be entirely sure came from the trans woman writer based on how very trans they read. But there's no way to know exactly what came from who without someone who worked on it to tell us. So we talked a little bit about this earlier, Kes, but like, did you pick up on underlying transness in this before knowing that there was a trans woman involved with it? Like, were you like, this reads kind of trans to me? Or was it like a complete surprise to you once that clicked with the trans woman writer?
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, watching this a few months after I hatched, I thought to myself, wow, this movie is super trans. I did not know that one of the writers was a trans woman, but
Okay. You picked up on it even before then, yeah.
it's definitely a movie interested in exploring gender roles and the roles that are forced on us and who we are told we must be as we
Yep.
grow to adulthood. And almost every single main character is deeply uncomfortable with the roles forced on them,
Yeah.
except for the villain of the piece. The one guy in the movie who is really a bad guy, he's like the only quote unquote cis character. He's the only one fully comfortable with patriarchy and with masculine social roles.
Yeah.
And Jerry is a jerk. You're meant to hate him, played by the tremendously gifted William Atherton, who
He's so good at
always,
playing jerks.
I know he always plays jerks, always,
Yeah.
always.
But he's good at it, so.
Oh, he's brilliant. He is so instantly hateable in everything,
Yeah.
which is what you want. You don't want
Exactly.
people liking the wrong character.
Exactly. It's an important skill for an actor to have. All right, so the trans woman credited as one of the writers on Real Genius is PJ Torakvey. She worked with Second City, wrote a handful of movies, and was showrunner of WKRP in Cincinnati for a while, but all of it was under her dead name. Once she transitioned, she had no further credits that I could find. I don't know if that's because she chose to retire from screenwriting or because of discrimination she faced after coming out. I certainly hope it's the former, but the transphobic world we live in, doubly so back then, makes me fear it was the latter. She came out in 2001 and died in 2013 from liver failure. Some secondhand information I found suggested her death may have been from complications from her medical transition, which is awful to think about. The thing that eases your pain being what kills you is just horrific. But there's also this thing we call trans broken arm syndrome, where you could go to the doctor for a broken arm and they blame it on us being trans somehow. This happens a lot with cis doctors, so the true cause of her medical issues is just not something we have details on. Also note that when PJ transitioned, WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, would have likely been on version 5 or possibly 6, depending on the timing of when she started. While not as horrific as version 1 was, it still classified being trans as a mental disorder, and there were a lot of problems with it. You can read a little more about the specific issues with those versions at a link in the show notes. To see where it all began, listen to episode 60 on transmedicalism and WPATH version 1 to truly understand what horrific bullshit trans people who wanted to medically transition in the recent past had to deal with. I was able to find and speak with someone who worked with her, though not on Real Genius, and I'll include some of his thoughts shortly. But first, I wanted to talk about a secondhand account of PJ from a friend of hers, Stan Brooks, in a letter written and published in The Hollywood Reporter after her death. That's as close as we can get to hard facts, but some of it is relevant. There's a link to this article in the show notes. I'm going to quote some important parts, but if you go to read the article, be aware that it routinely deadnames and misgenders her in an article written by her close friend and includes pre-transition photos of her. It was painful for me to read. Now, it happens out of ignorance and not malice, as far as I can tell. But note that even when it was written in 2013, trans people had so little cultural footprint that in a letter from a personal friend about our death, dead naming and misgendering was still rampant. For the portions I'm quoting, I will be using her correct pronouns and real name. Stan Brooks says PJ sent a letter to friends and family coming out on her 50th birthday. Part of it read, quote, "She was choosing to go public with the secret that she'd always felt trapped as a female in a man's body and that she planned to have surgery to change her sex." In the letter, PJ also confessed fears over losing friends, family, and her career. PJ was forced to, quote, "live as a woman," unquote, I hate it so much, for a year before any kind of medical intervention would be allowed, which almost assures that she was under WPATH version 5, as that bit of transphobic bullshit was still a requirement. Imagine being forced to live a year adhering to someone else's idea of what a woman is or should be just for the right to access the life-saving medical care you need. Can you imagine? It's pretty horrific. Stan asked her, quote, "why not just be gay and come out of the closet?" PJ's answer was all too obvious and drove home her anguish. PJ's reply, quote, "if only it was that easy. I wish I could do that. I'm not a man. I'm not attracted to gay men. No more than heterosexual women are attracted to them."
So conflating trans women with effeminate gay men, that is yeah. Such a 90s, early aughts thing. The very first time we started getting media representation, even in very well-meaning media, they did that to us. And they code yep. trans femme people as effeminate gay men, and I am not a man. That is not yeah. what a trans woman
same.
Is.
Yeah,
I'm gay, but I'm gay for girls.
Same, same. And yeah, they would always, so often too, have cis men playing us, and not actual trans women playing the trans women, right? Which is also a whole other problem. So imagine some of your closest friends asking why you don't just be a more quote-unquote acceptable form of queer, and the complete lack of understanding of what it means to be trans being the reply you get. And again, it's from a place of ignorance and not malice, but it's still painful. Quote, "some of PJ's friends from the Second City days and family members had turned their backs on her during this transition. Some never called again after reading the 50th birthday letter. Damn, that is heartbreaking and sadly all too common." The letter says there were serious complications from her gender confirmation surgery, which kept her going back to the hospital and may have eventually also contributed to her death. But again, trans broken arm syndrome is real, so who knows? What do you make of those things that her friend wrote about her, Kes? Do you have any thoughts about them? Like, how did it affect you after reading that?
Honestly, that sounds very familiar to me. People who yeah. want to do right, but don't have the language or the cultural yeah. background. It's better now, 20, 25, 30 years down the line. But yeah. we are still very much a mystery to a lot of well-meaning people.
Yep.
I came out to my employer last year, and this is funny because unfortunately they had to lay me off. They really didn't want to, but the tech market had just taken a downturn, and I was not out to them yet, and I thought, well, what the heck? They can only fire me once, right? But they were very, very supportive, but I could tell they were struggling to find the right terms, the right
sure.
way to support me. It's better now than it was. Like, they asked me, oh, what are your pronouns? What's your preferred name? How can we support you? But there's still a lot of discomfort and a lot of not really knowing the rules of the game.
Yeah.
I am not a woman trapped in a man's body. This is my body. It's a woman's body.
Yeah, exactly.
Likewise, people are sometimes like, well, but you're so butch. You were always so masculine. Sure, but A, that's not a nice thing to say to a woman. And B, a lot of us have to perform that masculinity. We have to work hard at it because we never feel like it's natural or easy for us.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of what people of my day and age have gone through. I'm another post-COVID hatchling.
Yeah.
And it is easier now, but my goodness, she must have gone through so much more just seeing the way her close friend treats her, which is not great. I'm sure he's not trying to be cruel, but
yeah, exactly.
He had a chance to educate himself and didn't even understand that he had to.
Yeah. As part of my research for this, I contacted writer Ian Boothby, who worked with PJ for a while, to see if I could get a little more info about what she was like. I'm going to include all of it because there is so very little information about PJ out there, and I want to preserve as much of her legacy as possible. Okay, so as we go through this, Susan, you have not had a lot to say, and I need a little bit of a break, so will you read Ian's responses?
Okay.
Thank you. All right. Can you tell me a little about how you first met PJ and what it was like working with her? What was her personality like?
BC Film, a Canadian government program, had a competition to write a sitcom. And I, along with Christine Lippa and Dean Haglund from The X-Files, wrote a pilot called Channel 92 about a failing sports channel that gets rebranded as a women's network. One of the very masculine slash sexist hosts has to adapt to their place in this new environment. It starred Gary Jones and Terrell Rothery from Stargate SG-1 and Ellie Harvey from The New Addams Family. PJ was still writing under her previous name and was brought in as our comedy consultant and expert on all things sitcom, having been one of the head writers for WKRP. We hit it off right away. I think we all had a background in improvisation, and that gave our sessions together a playfulness with the goal to build on each other's ideas. Looking back, the concept of a station evolving from a masculine to feminine energy has some symbolism. She was sharp, very quick, and filled with useful stories that lead us in the right direction. We were all SCTV fans, and so we were starstruck by someone who had worked on the show. We do a lot of movies and TV shows in British Columbia, but very little on our own. And PJ made what seemed like the impossible possible by showing us the structure of the sitcom while still giving us enough room to have our own identity.
Did you have any indication she might have been trans or was unhappy during her time pre-transition?
There was a lot of laughter in our times working together, but that doesn't always mean happiness. I wouldn't want to project. A few years later, after she transitioned, we visited her at her home in LA, and it was great catching up. She had the largest TV we had ever seen, embedded in a wall in a room filled with boxes because it was too big to actually watch. It was inspiring seeing someone live the LA writer life. There was a lot of joy when we caught up.
Did she ever talk about Real Genius or her time writing it?
I know she was proud of it. At the time, I enjoyed it and told her so. I do like that it's one of the rare 1980s comedies that doesn't feel exploitative of women, even though there are scenes which could easily have gone that way. Also, no homophobia, which for an 80s comedy is very rare. PJ and the other writers made a very funny film, celebrating intelligence and friendship while going after the right targets.
One thing I noticed in my rewatch, I actually watched this twice this week, getting prepped. One thing I noticed in a recent rewatch is there is one scene of really notable queerphobia, but I think it's more transphobia than it is homophobia. And I can talk to that when we get to the walkthrough if you want. But if I can mention it now, there's a scene where one of the lab geeks says to another, "You girls ready?" And the one with the stammer says, what do you mean by that? And he's clearly very stricken by it. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was in like hardcore manly man mode, nothing terrified me more than people clocking me as not masculine enough, as femme.
Yeah.
And that actually, seeing that scene hit me so hard I had to pause it and stop to reconsider, because it recontextualized the character for me instantly.
Yeah. We will get there, but that's a way that I think it might even be the last part is toward the end of the movie, I think.
It is.
Yeah. After she came out as trans, she seems to have not worked in TV or film again. Do you know if that was by choice or perhaps due to lack of opportunity for trans people? I know she was rejected by a lot of folks when she came out, which is sadly all too common for us.
I'm sorry to hear she didn't write much later on. She seemed quite well off, and I assumed she retired. But that was just a guess, and I didn't want to be nosy.
I wanted to include a photo of her with my write-up, but I only found one that was reportedly post-transition, and I couldn't find any confirmation that it was actually her. Can you tell if this is her? You can see the photo in the written version of this topic at TillysTransTuesdays.com.
I've seen that picture online, but that's it. I couldn't tell you personally if it's her. It looks close to how she looked the last time I saw her.
Thanks so much to Ian Boothby for taking the time to give us a little more context about the trailblazing trans woman screenwriter, especially because now we know some vital information that we didn't before. We know that PJ was happy with how Real Genius came out, which isn't always the case when there are multiple writers and a director who also changed things around. I think it's safe to assume that she believed most of what she was trying to do came through. I certainly saw it, and you will too, starting next week. But more importantly, we know that in the little time she had left post-transition, she was happy. Even if complications from her transition contributed to her death, even if rejected by far too many people who should have loved her for who she really was, she lived a happy and joyous life. It's a bright beam of sunlight in the darkness.
I know a lot of people see it as a great tragedy. You know, oh my goodness, it's so sad that she only got a few years to be her real self. But I think the flip side of that is it's a blessing because so many of us died without ever realizing who they are. They go to their graves unfulfilled. So while it would have been lovely if she had more time, I am super glad that she got to be PJ, her real self, for at least a couple of years.
Same. Real Genius was released in 1985, meaning it was written somewhere in the years prior, giving the generally slow-moving pipeline of Hollywood movies. We don't know exactly when it was written or when PJ worked on it, but it was likely somewhere in the early 80s. Regardless of how she presented at the time, or her friends, family, and the entire world thinking she was a cisgender man, we know that she knew she was trans and was very aware of why she had to stay in the closet for so long. If you're trans, you've always been trans, and via the aforementioned article about her death, she knew she was a woman regardless of when she began transitioning. Transitioning isn't what makes you trans, it's what alleviates and addresses the problem of living as the wrong gender. So given what we do know, and what you're going to see through the rest of these episodes, I feel comfortable saying the pieces of trans allegory that made it into the final version of the movie were absolutely intentional on her part. But note that doesn't always mean consciously intentional. I've said many times how in my own past writing I can now clearly see I was working through my own complicated thoughts and feelings about gender, without even consciously knowing that's what I was doing at the time. That doesn't mean I didn't intend to do that. I absolutely did. I just didn't recognize the meaning behind it at the time. But a lot of it was very much consciously intentional, I think. It's all hidden under metaphor, but that's the only way she could talk about being trans in a movie in the 1980s, especially when it's not about the harmful tropes of us being jokes to be mocked, victims of violence, or deceptive sexual predators. Thanks for being here, Kes.
I'm glad to be here, Tilly. Thank you so much for having me.
Real Genius is a celebration of transness. And now that you've got the context, next week we're going to dive into the movie itself and you're going to see what being trans meant to PJ and means to a lot of us, and how it can change the world. Tilly Bridges and Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, and you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.